Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony continues its season tomorrow evening at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center with a program titled Folk Dances. And it will also recognize a retired orchestra member who served the city's musical education community for about a half century. Principal guest conductor Daniel Heggie returns to the orchestra to lead the musicians at a program featuring two works by English composer Ralph Vaughan Williams, his London Symphony, and his engaging tuba concerto featuring Jared Robertson, the orchestra's principal tubist, as soloist. That will be played along with Benjamin Britten's Simple Symphony for strings and Béla Bartók's Romanian folk dances. Along with the concert music, the orchestra will also recognize Ron Wheeler, a former TSO musician and the longtime conductor of the Tulsa Youth Symphony, for his extraordinary efforts in bringing classical music to new generations here in our community. He'll receive the inaugural Ron Wheeler Tulsa Symphony Music Educator of the Year Award during the performance, and it's richly deserved. But today I'm joined by Daniel Heggie to discuss the music and preview Saturday's concert, which will occur with strict COVID protocols at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. You can read about them and learn more about the concert at tulsasymphony.org. Daniel Heggie is my guest today. Daniel Heggie, welcome back to Studio Tulsa, although we're virtual today, but it's good to speak with you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Rich. Great to be here.
This program called Folk Dances, really there's only one piece that really actually has genuine folk material that Bartók collected in Romania and Transylvania, but all the rest of the pieces have that sort of folk element. Vaughan Williams collected folk songs. Britten really didn't, but even his piece has a little bit of an idea of that folk melody rearing its head throughout this program, I would say.
Absolutely. If we look at folk music, we know that it's music that has been drawn on from music from before. And so I think if we think of it that way, we certainly can see the folk element throughout the program. As you rightly mentioned, the Romanian folk dances actually does draw on the folk idioms and rhythms and melodies of Transylvania. With Britten's Simple Symphony, he wrote this Simple Symphony. It's just for strings, or can be played by a string quartet, but it's usually just a string orchestra. And it's in four movements. He wrote it when he was 20 years old, and it was based on all pieces that he had written between the ages of 9 and 12, which I find really fascinating because it's a very sophisticated piece of music. And to think that he wrote those pieces when he was just a child at the piano, and then he orchestrated them 10 years later, is really quite fascinating. In any case, it really is hearkening back, even though it's not folk material per se. And then again, with the Vaughan Williams London Symphony, he is drawing on material of the time from before. It also has folk-like material in it. But he's very quick to say that people should not be thinking of it as program music, but rather like absolute music.
So. And that's really interesting when it comes to the Vaughan Williams London Symphony, because it is atmospheric as all get out, isn't it?
It is. It is. And some program annotators have said that really it's absolute music with subtitles, in a sense, which almost makes it the best of both worlds, because it does. The music is very picturesque and it does create a picture. But I think that we have to see that he wasn't trying to necessarily depict anything physically, even though there are physical references, but rather it's more what's happening internally for him as he reflects on these physical images that represent a part of his life, a part of a Londoner's life. In fact, he said that it'd be more accurate to call the piece a symphony written by a Londoner rather than the London Symphony, because it was on his own observations. So if he speaks about a particular movement as having kind of a fog-laden Bloomsbury Square, which the second movement has, it's not so much that picture itself, but it's what he's thinking of, how it affects him.
Now, this piece is a wonderful piece. It's very rarely played by orchestras. Do you have a reason for that?
I really don't know why, because it is tuneful. It is boisterous. It has these deeply kind of internal and meditative moments. It is so rich with material. I think it has really everything in it. And of course, in the version we're doing, it's about 45 to 50 minutes long. which is a pared down version of how it was originally written. When he wrote it in 1913, there's at least 20 more minutes in that original version. And he toyed with this and went through and revised it several times. So we're doing the one that's more often played and the one that he really wanted to have played. But yeah, it's a bit of a mystery to me. I wasn't that familiar with it before, and I think a lot of audiences just haven't heard it a lot, but it's a really great piece of music. I covered for this piece a number of times when I was an assistant conductor, an associate conductor, when I was asked to go in and be there as an understudy. So I've gone through the process of learning it for that. And so it's just a matter of relearning it in a sense.
What's the process of discovery during this week and as you've revisited this score?
Well, I look for the things that I normally look for in music, which is first of all, form and structure and the use of pitch sets, you might say, just for motivic devices that unify the piece. Because if you do that, you can find those elements in the music as you're studying it, and then you bring them out hopefully in rehearsals so that it becomes a very unified whole. So I look for those things hiding in the music, and there's really a wealth of all of that, of great musical material. What I was struck by as I studied this time was how economic Ralph Vaughan Williams was in writing it. In other words, when we begin the symphony, the very first movement, it starts with a very low theme starting in the double basses and cellos. And it's really almost like London is in a slumber. This is before dawn, you know, actually happens. And at first it just looks like kind of a bass motif, but then he starts using it melodically and it occurs here and there in canon form throughout the movement. And he really does so much with it. Also, the first movement especially is quite ingenious with the form. Structurally, I think it's really quite a magnificent work. And those are kinds of the things I discovered.
Earlier, you talked about the pitch set. Are you talking about the keys that he works out of, the musical keys that he works out of, or how each movement relates to itself from key to key, or what exactly?
Well, right away, I start to look at some of the first thematic elements, so intervals and actual notes that are used. And I see how he uses that to create themes and to create counter themes. If he inverts those themes to bring them out, because I think if those things are brought out, I think the listener actually can hear them. They may not consciously realize it, but somehow the piece will feel very complete. If someone is simply sitting back and listening, they don't have to listen for those things necessarily. I think they just can allow the music, if they're an active listener, to just simply greet them. And if they bring at least 50% back in their listening, they will absorb some of these things that are happening. When I say the pitch sets, I guess that's just kind of a fancy way of just saying some of the intervals that create the themes.
Right. And of course, Vaughan Williams used modality all throughout his life. And some of that's apparent here. But, you know, getting back to this folk dance theme, when you think of the third movement, I mean, it's an original melody, but it certainly has that sound of those English folk songs that Holst and Percy Grainger and other composers were collecting in the beginning of the 20th century.
Oh, yeah, that third movement. First of all, that third movement is just a barn burner. It's a scherzo. It's very fast and very virtuosic for the orchestra. And it's interestingly called Nocturne. as kind of a subtitle, but it is Allegro Vivace. It has an imitation of a harmonica in the middle of it that he does in a very ingenious way. I don't know how he invented it, but it's this great way that he has the strings playing sustain, but then doing a fast crescendo diminuendo, very like this, but the horns, he has the French horns doing just the opposite crescendo and diminuendo. And it makes this really great sound of like a harmonica. Like when you're blowing and sucking in on it. So he has these folk elements without necessarily copying actual folk tunes, except for here and there. And as he says, by accidents.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. I mean, the piece is sort of this mix of terminology because, you know, that third movement is very fast. It sounds like a scherzo, but he also labels it nocturne, which, you know, you don't see that necessarily.
That third movement that we're talking about with Nocturne, I know what you're saying about this, almost like a contradiction of terms, but the ending of the third movement which has been so boisterous right up until about the very end of it, then does turn to a rather nocturnal side. It just kind of dwindles away from this very active texture and then suddenly goes to almost like a benediction, but it has almost a frightful sound about it. And then it tries to be kind of nurturing and positive, but then it comes back to these darker sounds and it just kind of ends off into the ether. It's a very original way to end such a boisterous movement, that third movement.
Well, let's hear a little music from the London Symphony. And what I've chosen is from the first movement, and it's really the first major mood shift of the piece, because you mentioned the opening of the piece and how that little theme is developed. And that section ends with the harp playing the clock watch, the top of the hour.
Westminster chimes. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it's like a Donnybrook ensues. What can you tell us about this particular moment?
Oh, yeah. It's really great. I mean, it's really like for the first two or three minutes of the symphony, it is really kind of like you can say London, but it's really like the wakening, an awakening of sorts. And then, yes, you hear the Westminster chimes and the harp and clarinet doubling. And then all of a sudden, the woodwinds start to move faster and faster. The horns come in. And then there's this huge silence, this very pregnant pause. And then just almost like a panic ensues. It's just this, you're just hit right between the eyes with this. And almost a tragic feeling. It's an augmented triad, which already has more tension in it than many other types of chords. And then these parallel movements down, all of a sudden, it's like, okay, now we're really in it. And then from that point on, it really develops from there.
Here's music from the London Symphony by Ralph Vaughan Williams. As music that will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony this Saturday evening, Ralph Vaughan Williams' London Symphony from the first movement. My guest today is Daniel Heggie, the principal guest conductor of the Tulsa Symphony, who will lead the TSO in a program titled Folk Dances, featuring lots of music by Vaughan Williams, as well as music by Britten and Bartok. Let's go to the opening of the program. I assume it'll be the opening, Bella Bartok's Romanian Folk Dances. These are like six movements, but they're like incredibly short works. And as I read about it, and I've always been interested in this piece because it's almost like a statement of the folk tune, and then we're off to a next one. I guess Bartok collected these tunes himself.
He did. He and Zoltán Kodály, who were contemporaries, just became deeply interested in the folk music of their area, of their region, and they went out together, and they were able to take dictation and record and publish over 1,000 of these tunes. Throughout Hungary. And this started in probably about 1905, when he would have been something like 24 years old. And it became a lifelong passion for Bartok to collect these Hungarian, and in this case, Transylvanian folk tunes. So about 10 years after he began doing that, we're at 1915 now, he decided to write these Romanian folk dances. And he chose six of the dances. And they're only about a minute long, each dance. Very, very short, goes from one to the other, but they're so completely different from each other. Each dance has its own character. And he first wrote it just for piano, but then it's later been orchestrated in all kinds of different ways. He wrote it in 1915 for piano, and then later for a chamber orchestra in 1917. And that's what we'll be playing. And it does have winds and strings on it. But there are a bunch of different iterations of this these Romanian folk dances, but they all have the same movements, and all, like I said, completely different in character.
It's interesting. You said he was collecting Hungarian, Transylvanian folk songs, but in fact, that part of Transylvania moved over to Romania after World War I. That's why it is titled Romanian folk dances. And
yes.
And again, you hear the influence of the Romani people in many of these movements. That beautiful music that has inspired composers well back into the 19th century. And that's what's at the heart of these pieces.
Right. So, yeah, even in the 19th century, there was a real fascination. We see it a lot in Brahms's music and Liszt's music. But Bartók really, and Kodály as well, were really able to do such a great job at integrating the folk idioms and folk melodies into their own very personal musical style, which is something I think is very different. And I think Romanian folk dances is almost like, you know, exhibit A in how well Bartók was able to incorporate that music into his own style.
Well, as we mentioned, they're very short movements. Why don't we hear the last two movements of the Romanian folk dances? These are very fast. Again, they reflect that Romani influence, I think. And they're just tour de forces. Here's music by Bartók. That's music from the Romanian folk dances of Béla Bartók, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday evening. My guest today is Daniel Heggie, the principal guest conductor of the Tulsa Symphony. Well, from the music of Bartók, we hear more Vaughan Williams, and this is a wonderful piece. It's become a staple for tuba players everywhere. And, you know, when you hear the idea of a tuba concerto, I think even still today, people go, really? A tuba concerto? This is an amazing, amazing piece. It's so tuneful. It's such a wonderful experience to hear it. And you have a wonderful tuba soloist in Jared Robertson. Wonderful player.
Oh, he's a fantastic player. And the thing that's really astonishing to me is that after he plays the concerto, he's going to play tuba on the Vaughan Williams Symphony. That's not something you always see, but boy, I tell you, you know, brass players are.
Yes.
I mean, they get a chance to play. They want to play the concerto and they want to play in the orchestra. So hats off to him. He is a tremendous tuba player. And so I'm really looking forward to working with him on this.
Now, it's interesting. People might still have that reaction to the idea of a tuba concerto today, but certainly in the early 1950s when Vaughan Williams wrote this, people thought it was a joke until they heard it.
Oh, yeah. Well, because most people are used to hearing tubas in marches and things like that. And so they think it's oompa, oompa all the time. They really don't know that the tuba is capable of such a lyrical voice. It has such a vocal quality, which you can really hear throughout the entire concerto, especially in the second movement. I just want to add that, you know, this concerto is only about 12 minutes long. I mean, that's 12 minutes is about, you know, the length of maybe the first movement of a Mendelssohn violin concerto or something. But this entire concerto, all three movements, about 12 minutes. So it's short, but boy, does Vaughan Williams pack a lot of notes and a lot of meaning into these 12 minutes.
It has this beautiful lyrical start in the first movement. The second movement is, if anything, even more lyrical. And then there's just this tour de force finale, which is just, well, it's like the proverbial bat out of hell.
It really is. In fact, I saw a funny little quote about it. Michael Kennedy calls it the elephant romp, humorous and salty. And it's interesting because Vaughan Williams put two cadenzas in this concerto, and that's a little unusual too. We're used to, in a more traditional concerto, hearing just one, maybe at the end of the first movement, but he does one there, end of the first movement and the end of the third movement. So there's really a lot of time that the tuba player really gets to be in the spotlight. So It's a great, great piece. And, you know, I just want to emphasize again what you've been saying, that it's such a lyrical, tuneful work for tuba. And I think people will be astonished if they're used to, you know, kind of sticking with what they might think is the stereotype of what the tuba does, just the oompa sound, to hear such a vocal quality in this work.
This is not a polka band piece.
No.
Well, why don't we hear music? Why don't we hear a little music from the first movement, which gives folks a sense of that lyricism we're talking about. Here's the music of Vaughan Williams from his tuba concerto. That's music from the Tuba Concerto of Vaughan Williams, which will be performed by Jared Robertson as part of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's program this Saturday night, featuring lots of music by Vaughan Williams, including the London Symphony, Bartok's Romanian Folk Dances, and Benjamin Britten's Simple Symphony. My guest today is the principal guest conductor of the Tulsa Symphony, Daniel Hagee, back with us today on Studio Tulsa. Well, the final work, which we haven't talked about, is the Benjamin Britten Simple Symphony. As you alluded to it earlier, these were melodies he wrote as a child. And even though I think they were polished up a bit through the sophisticated adult Britten, these melodies are really, really wonderful. And he brings it to the fore in this work for strings.
He really does. I am just amazed at the craftsmanship, even as a 20-year-old. I mean, he wrote the tunes when he was between the ages of 9 and 12, but then visited them later at age 20, and then made even more out of them with a lot of, you know, counterpoint and a lot of craft, like compositional craft. I say that because I think there's a difference between someone who can sit down and maybe write a nice melody and maybe even a basic accompaniment, and then people will say, oh, that's really, really nice, it's really pretty. But really, a composer's craft is, what do you do with it? Now you've written it, but now the compositional process really starts to begin when you set out to create structure and form with it and a sense of drama and purpose. And that's what I'm really kind of astonished by, is not only the original material from when he was a child and going back and revisiting them, but coming back as a 20-year-old and then bringing such a high degree of polish to the piece.
And really the movement titles, which have this lovely alliterative sense, the playful pizzicato, the sentimental sarabande, that's sort of harkening back to the old suites, the instrumental suites of the Baroque period. But
absolutely.
And the beret is usually one you would think would be later, but it actually opens the symphony. Do you think he was using that deliberately, or was it just the fact that these melodies resembled a beret, for example? Maybe he was actually doing an exercise in that form.
He could have been. I do think he's really trying to evoke for the listener something that is really going to be very optimistic and lighthearted and fun. And I think that's really wonderful that someone can do that with titles, just already kind of get you in the right mindset and the right mood for hearing something just based on the words themselves. Boisterous bourré, playful pizzicato, sentimental sarabande, and frolicsome finale. These are wonderful titles, very juicy, you might say. And he is hearkening back with, back to 17th century French dances and things like that, with especially with the bourré and the sarabande. But I think that the order of the pieces, you know, the order of the four movements really has more to do with how it works as a kind of a nice arc to the piece, because the sentimental sarabande is very slow compared to the other three movements, and it happens third, and so that sets it up for a nice, very virtuosic ending with the frolicsome finale.
Well, why don't we hear one more excerpt, a preview of a Saturday night's concert. It probably is the most recognizable movement of the four, and it's the playful pizzicato. Here's music by Benjamin Britten. That's music by Benjamin Britten, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra Saturday evening in a program called Folk Dances with our guest today, Daniel Heggie, the principal guest conductor of the Tulsa Symphony. Well, Daniel, in our last couple of minutes, how has your season been going? I know a lot of orchestras, some orchestras have started and they've stopped. What's been your conducting life like this year?
Well, it's actually, we've been, in Binghamton Philharmonic, my other orchestra, we've actually been doing all of our concerts just as scheduled in the fall. There is one thing at the end of January that got postponed because we were concerned about, we were bringing in several different orchestras to do a big festival, and we thought that would be a little bit much. But otherwise, we've been staying right on schedule. With the Wichita Symphony, we've also been able to meet and still do concerts in the fall. We've been wearing masks, but we also require the musicians to either be vaccinated or to bring proof of a negative COVID test. And we physically distance on the stage, strings, percussionists wear masks, and wind and woodwinds and brass players, whenever they're not actually playing their instrument, have to put their mask on and they have to stay separated from each other. So we have a lot of health protocols in place, and they're doing the same thing in Tulsa.
Well, it will be good to see you. It's sort of a late start to your principal guest conducting work here in Tulsa this year, but we're certainly happy to see you. And I know we're going to see you several other times this season as well.
I'm excited to be back, and it's just because of schedules, just the way they are.
Well, Daniel, it's a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. Great to be here.
Daniel Heggie is the principal guest conductor of the Tulsa Symphony, who will lead the orchestra in a program titled Folk Dances, featuring Vaughan Williams' London Symphony, as well as works by Bartok and Benjamin Britten. Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall. Strict COVID protocols will be in place. You can learn more about the concert and about the protocols at tulsasymphony.org. Well, we're going to leave you with more music from the Vaughan Williams London Symphony. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.